Hi guys. So we're at the Overlook and it's been a lot of fun, but Byron's doing a lot of stuff and he can't edit the episode because he's doing too much.
I'll just stay up.
Well, if he stays up, he's going to be useless, and that's going to make for bad things in general. Really, it's going to be okay though, because you guys can listen to an episode of Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies instead of listening to the episode you were going to listen to this week. And that means that you can look forward to listening to the episode next week all about the Endless.
So it's your ship this week?
It's my ship. It's always a better week when it's Kelly's ship anyway. So you guys enjoy yourselves. I'm sorry about the other episode being late.
Stay scared.
Welcome aboard the SS Puckwudgie McDufferson.
I was hoping we'd be on a different ship by now.
Nope. You guys are stuck here. You guys are stuck here forever. You ever see that movie Triangle?
Yeah, I have. It's a good film.
It's like that.
You just can't seem to mobilize the mutiny.
Well, that's good, because I would not expect such behavior out of cabin fellas. Perhaps out of cabin boys.
No,
not out of cabin fellas.
I need this.
You do. Happy end of summer. Everyone.
It's over.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's on its way out.
Kick that stupid season in the ass on its way out the door.
Well, I really like the summer, but that's okay. You guys, the next time you hear from a full Captain Kelly and her crew, we're going to be broadcasting from the sea.
You're right. We are going to be broadcasting from the sea.
So this is our last landlocked episode of the season.
Uh-huh.
And in honor of the landlockedness of the episode, we are going to talk about ships. One ship.
Okay.
Called the USS Eldridge. You guys familiar with the USS Eldridge?
Not super familiar, but before we get into it.
I was told that you guys went to Merchant Marine School and you guys are supposed to know about these things.
Kelly, before we get into it.
Yes.
Can we thank our Patreon patrons for all their support this month?
You guys are obviously all the best. You guys are way better than cabin fellas. But you patrons, you guys are doing just great. You guys just keep up the good work. You hear?
Yeah, it means a lot to us. That's all I was getting.
It really does. Thank you, guys.
It really, really does.
And I'm sorry that as a reward, this is what you get.
Well, I'm not sorry, because you guys are going to enjoy this little journey on the USS Eldridge. Although, be careful. Don't move. You're going to see why later. You may think that it's okay to walk through walls, but it's not.
I never implied that I thought that was fine.
I know, but our co-captains might think that's okay. Right. So just stay seated. Stay exactly where you are and do not move. Understand? Okay, we're dropping anchor. Or are we picking anchor up?
I don't know where we are.
I mean, I feel like...
Is it anchors away or...
I feel like it's anchors away. We're raising the anchor up, guys.
Picking it up.
We're picking it up and we're sailing.
1, 2, 3, not it.
Byron,
both of you.
Byron and I are, it's above our pay grade.
Walk the plank.
What to do with anchors.
Pick up the anchors.
It's really the captain's job.
Pick up the anchors, and while you're picking up the anchors, both of you sons of bitches, tell me about the USS Eldridge.
I don't know.
Nothing.
I know the first two lines that I read off of Wikipedia.
Really?
And from the Philadelphia Experiment movie.
USS Eldridge, fellas, it was a destroyer escort. And it was destroyer escort number 173, specifically. Something very mysterious happened to it on August 12, 1943. Accounts are very, very different in terms of what happened. But what we do know is that it was at the Philadelphia Navy Yard, even though that is disputed by some people trying to debunk, but I will debunk them. There was a test that was going on. Some people say that the test was supposed to be working on magnetic invisibility. Others say it was supposed to be working on radar invisibility. Others say it was supposed to be working on optical invisibility or even degaussing. Sam, can you explain what degaussing is?
What the heck is degaussing?
When have I ever even pretended to know anything about science?
Violent science, therefore you're supposed to know about it.
I think it's basically demagnetizing ferrous metals.
It's rendering the ship immune to magnetic mines. So part of warfare in World War II, they would send out mines that would literally attract to large metallic objects. And if you could degauss a ship, it would no longer attract those very scary mines. Nobody wants to attract mines.
Absolutely not.
No.
I don't think they actually attract the mines. I think that they were fused magnetically.
What?
To go off when they detected a large iron object or steel object approaching them.
Right. And if you're degaussed, then you're not detectable by the magnetic mine, shitface.
Just pretend like it didn't happen.
These tests produced some very interesting results. The project that initiated these tests was supposedly called Project Rainbow, but that has been not verified. It's just a suspected title mentioned in some documents that people have picked up. This has been really buried, though. So afterwards, the project was supposedly completely disbanded. All right. The head of the experiment was allegedly Dr. Franklin Reno, but it was an application of Einstein's unified field theory. Who wants to explain Einstein's unified field theory?
I'm going to just tap out of all of those.
Yep, stop asking me things.
To make it simple, guys, the experiment was supposed to draw a direct connection between gravity, electromagnetism, and electromagnetic space-time warping. And just so you know, I obviously can't talk to you two about this because you're fucking morons.
Come on now, we're doing our best.
Could you hear my eyes glaze over?
But I will tell you, Einstein's unified field theory is not nonsense, okay?
It's an Einstein.
It's Einstein, all right?
We all know Einsteins are pretty accurate.
So let's just assume for a second that it was a radar invisibility test. Now, some debunkers out there have said, it wasn't a radar invisibility test. The Germans didn't even have radar in World War II, which is a bunch of dumb shit, because they did. I'm not saying that what I'm going to say today about Philadelphia experiment is absolutely the case, but there was radar, so that's a dumb argument against it.
It was in its infancy, though.
Which is one of the reasons it was so scary, because suddenly everything was detectable, and being sneaky sneak was much harder than it used to be.
Sure.
Okay, so the tests being conducted, let's just assume, were an attempt to render a ship invisible to, in this case, German or Japanese radar. The way they planned to accomplish this was by wrapping an electromagnetic bottle around the ship in question, which would absorb or deflect radar waves. This bottle was created by massive Tesla coils. Damn, can you talk to us a minute about a Tesla coil?
Basically, just a big construction that channels lots of electricity up it, and it looks like something from a mad scientist laboratory. It goes bzz, bzz,
bzz. Thank you so much for not completely failing, Sam. That was much better than your previous attempts at explaining something scientific or intellectual today. I really appreciate that effort. It was really good.
That's good, because I have absolutely no idea how they work.
Okay, well, that's fine. Okay, so at least one was mounted forward and one was mounted aft. Are you guys familiar with what aft means?
Yes. I worked at an airport.
I worked forward
and aft, front and back.
Good.
Worked at an airport as well.
Wow, look at you two. Two peas in a pod in a ship, my ship. Other accounts state that the series of magnetic generators called degaussers were used. And when activated, the electromagnetic field apparently extended out from the ship a little ways to divert radar waves around the ship. So it doesn't affect just the physical ship itself. It like spits some juju out around, okay?
Is that right?
Yeah.
Some juju.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so there are different silos of accounts we're talking about here. But one category says that when the actual test was put into motion, a number of unexpected and bizarre things unfolded. As the electromagnetic field increased in strength, it extended as far as 100 yards out from the ship in all directions and formed this large sphere. Those of you who have seen the Philadelphia experiment will remember that not incredibly technologically advanced visual from the movie, because it was made in the 80s.
Yeah. Yes.
Within that field, the ship started getting kind of fuzzy, difficult to see, and this greenish haze formed around the vessel. Now, at this point, Byron, I'm going to point our listeners to an image that's going to be up in the show notes. And this image is supposedly an untouched photo of the USS Eldridge taken during the experiment. Okay, you guys want to take a peek at that untouched photo?
It looks like a drawing.
Yeah, so that's the green haze, guys. All right.
That's untouched?
It's untouched.
Yeah, I'm with Byron. It doesn't look like a photograph.
As people are watching, suddenly the entire ship started disappearing, and the only visible object to the people looking on this experiment was the outline of the hull where it hit the water. And then it was completely gone. And everybody went, whoa?
Slow down.
Mm-hmm.
The USS Eldridge.
Big ass ship.
Has just disappeared.
Disappeared. August 1943. Pow! At this point in time, we suddenly realized, holy shit, electromagnetic field big deal. We're in the thick of World War II. People are like, wow, this means a lot. But they're also a little bit concerned because...
we just lost a ship.
Yeah, so it wasn't as though it just disappeared, according to this category of reports. It was actually gone. All right? According to some people, the ship was instantly transported several hundred miles to Norfolk, Virginia.
So this was a planned thing?
No.
How did it get there?
Well, why we're not really sure.
Why did it go to Norfolk, Virginia instead of, I don't know, hell?
I don't know. But it was there for only a few minutes, and then it popped back and returned to Philadelphia. The Navy's like, holy shit, not only did we knock it out of the park with this radar invisibility shit, we've done something even bigger. This is a really big deal. Now we can make things optically invisible, maybe move things around without actually traveling. So, this is all really, really cool.
Was it their intention to create a teleportation device at this time? Or
the problem is there's no really detailed records on what their intention was. A lot of people say it was simply radar invisibility. Now, if that was the case, they went pretty far and above and beyond with this. Maybe it was something more complicated than that. But the most important part here that we want to talk about is the Navy's high-fiving, but the crew, not high-fiving.
They're doing their best.
The crew is really struggling, and they've been through a really horrific thing, okay? So now we're going to explain something that sounds a little strange. I bet you guys are going to catch on, though. I know the listeners are going to catch on, and I'm hoping you two are going to catch on.
You got to cut us some slack.
I'm sorry.
We will freaking drop the dinghy. We dropped dinghies last time.
Will you?
Absolutely.
I will fucking torpedo your ass.
And what kind of boat are we on?
What is this?
And I will turn on
torpedoes on a submarine.
The electromagnetic field, and I will send you to fucking hell.
We have to settle down here.
I feel like if those are the threats that you're making, Byron and I are probably fairly safe.
You guys just continue thinking that. Anyhow, so what happened during this test is that the entire ship was out of phase with the surrounding universe's time-space continuum. Because it was out of phase as a result of the giant electromagnetic field they created, it was able to travel from Philadelphia to Norfolk. Now, side note, I am going off of the science that I've read. I do not have a background in nuclear physics.
I can't wait to do a super cut of the things you
don't have a background
a background in.
I do have a background.
Say all of them?
No, what? I have a background. Well,
oh, she's a cryptozoologist.
I'm a cryptozoologist.
And a member of the Fairy Society.
I am. Yep. The problem is moving the ship out of phase wasn't necessarily a big deal because the ship only is going to associate with the phase, since it's an inanimate object, with the phase that it's in. So if it's moving to a different phase, we're okay. However, humans have their own inherent phases because they're autonomous living beings. When you move them out of phase with the surrounding universe, it's much, much scarier than moving an inanimate object. And we're going to get into this in a little bit more detail later, but Nikola Tesla, obviously they use Tesla coils, and this experiment did take place post poor Tesla's death. Tesla died in January of 43, and this experiment took place in August, but apparently he had been asked to do this experiment earlier. He refused to do it with live crew because he was trying to explain to them that this is going to fuck their shit up royally, that they can't live through this. This is not something that would be okay. You can only put an inanimate object in this field until we figure out what the hell we're doing.
And he hates hurting people.
He was actually a real nice guy.
Well, he was against alternating as his.
Yeah, he
direct
was against current.
Direct current.
Because that guy kept shocking elephants to death.
Yeah.
Who was that guy?
Edison.
Yeah. Don't talk to Sam about Edison.
You're not a big Edison guy?
Fucking hack.
Seemed like a jerk.
Tesla, one of his things was inventing what we would call a death ray that would end war.
Tesla wanted to create a death ray?
Mm-hmm. To end war. Death to war.
It was basically the nuclear weapon of its time.
Interesting.
Okay, so Tesla tried to warn them, like, don't freaking do this. Not with people. Well, they didn't listen, obviously. During the experiment, crew members found that they could walk through solid objects. And then suddenly when the field was shut off, men were found embedded in bulkheads, decks, railings. The results were gruesome enough that some went completely crazy. Some crew members completely vanished. A few just totally disappeared into thin air. Some days, weeks later, were eating dinner with their family, got up and walked through a wall and disappeared forever.
Wait, what?
The whole issue is that their composition and structure atomically with relation to their surroundings was completely turned on its head.
It has changed permanently.
Terrifying. All right.
And it's very inconsistent too.
Yes, because some of them didn't have nearly the effects. Others had huge effects. Like, so this is why I was warning our co-captains at the beginning of the episode. You may think that you can get up and walk through a wall. Don't do it. Just stay seated.
And if you think you can do that, maybe contact a psychiatrist.
Well, perhaps we'll give you some names of some other people you can contact later in the episode, some people that are really familiar with exactly what happened this day. So there were other reports of men entering what was called the freeze. This is where they would fade from view and they were unable to move, speak, or have any interaction with their surroundings. It began where that freeze would only last for a few minutes, sometimes a few hours, and then sometimes they would go into freeze and would never come back. When they never came back or when it lasted for like days or months, it was known as the deep freeze. It was also known as getting caught in the flow, caught in the push, or, Byron, are you ready for this?
Yeah, of course. Born ready.
Getting stuck? Stuck?
That's enough.
Oh, Jesus.
Going blank. Hell Incorporated. Stuck in molasses. So the deep freeze could drive men crazy.
Was there anyone that when they came out of it, would they call it being freezer burn?
I mean, that would be really cool. I didn't hear that one.
All right.
You know, you see movies where people are supposedly ghosts and they're trying to interact with the world around them and they can't.
Like the movie Ghost.
Well, yeah, it kind of sounds like that. Men would go completely batshit. So the Navy at least acknowledged that there were some pretty bad effects of this experiment, supposedly discontinued all further research into radar and optical invisibility. Now, we all know that that wouldn't happen.
They publicly said that something went wrong?
No.
Okay.
They publicly do not discuss this event. Oh. This event didn't happen, according to them. Surviving crewmen were discharged as mentally unfit for duty. Many were placed in insane asylums, which we all know that back in the 40s, that was not a place you wanted to be.
No,
not filthy. Good places.
Check out American Horror Story.
If you're looking for a really intense documentary about awful conditions of mental institutions, I don't know how to pronounce this exactly. It's Titty Cut Follies.
Horrible.
It's a 1967 film. Check it out. Really.
So was
intense.
It a documentary or was it like a fiction?
Okay. It's a doc about, was it a Massachusetts state hospital?
Ugh.
Intense.
Yeesh.
Basically, all the Navy has acknowledged is that the foundation for the apocryphal stories arose from the degaussing experiments, which have had the effect to make a ship undetectable or invisible to magnetic mines. That's pretty much all they've been willing to admit to. But at different points in time, different Navy officials have come out and said sometimes contradictory things, sometimes similar things, many times things that disagree with the official Navy line on it. I mean, this is no new story to any of our listeners. They throw enough information out there. Who the hell knows what's true and what isn't true? Something undeniably strange happened, and we are left with some very interesting accounts from people who have dedicated a lot of time to researching this topic. Thank you to them. I'm going to express some thank yous because I have no doubt that the realm we are diving into next is going to yield quite a bit of criticism from my two cabin fellas in the direction of these upstanding American citizens who have dedicated their lives to researching a very controversial topic.
Dedicated is, I would use a different word. Wasted.
I figured that was where you were going to go with it. So what we're going to do now, you guys, is we're going to talk in detail about the accounts from a gentleman named Alfred Bielek, B-I-E-L-E-K. He was born August 4th, 1916. Sadly died in 2011.
Oh, man.
I know, but he spent a lot of time researching the story, and we're going to read quite a bit of direct quotes from his story. Ready, steady, go. The U.S. Navy has always stated that the story printed below never happened. They have a website which lists the logbook of the Eldridge and statements from staff associated with the ship that state that all what is printed below is rubbish. They have gone to an enormous amount of trouble to deny anything and to ridicule anyone who states otherwise. I will pause and say that is an interesting piece of information because if you guys remember, a lot of the things that we have talked about in the past, the government just ignores. They don't put out denials. They don't try and contradict it. They just ignore it. They're like, whatever, fucking crazies you're going to believe.
Well, and once
what
again,
crazies are going to believe.
I think I mentioned this during the moon week.
Yeah.
People don't have enough time to focus on giving people evidence that things don't exist.
So what's interesting here is they have spent a lot of time and effort opposing what seemed to be completely insane theories, which makes me wonder, why don't they just ignore them? Because when you guys hear all of this, pretty far out there. And again, you know me, I believe very strongly in the powers of disinformation. And I think that there probably is a decent amount of truth here. I can't tell you what that truth is. I'm going to have to let you guys sort through that and come to your own conclusions. But I will say it's interesting to me that given the crazy nature of this story, the government has spent quite a bit of energy trying to debunk it. The crazy story that I'm going to read is on the website of a gentleman named Phil, who has decided to post the story of a very brave man who dedicated his life to this entire story. What I'm going to read first is an intro from Phil, and then I'm going to read Alfred Beilich's story himself. Here are Phil's words. The U.S. Navy has always stated that the story printed below never happened. They have a website which lists the logbook of the Eldridge and statements from staff associated with the ship that state all what is printed below is rubbish. They have gone to an enormous amount of trouble to deny anything and to ridicule anyone who states otherwise. The question I pose is this. Why would the Navy be so concerned about the story? Why would they take the time and trouble and expense to go to all that effort to rubbish the story? Why not just shut up about it and ignore it? I am not posting this up on my website for any reason other than that I have read about this since the 1960s in books and magazines, and when the internet came along in the early 90s, I started to see a lot more. Then I came across the denials of the U.S. Navy and saw other websites from supposed individuals also discrediting the story, along with a whole lot of clatter about aliens and stuff that seemed to me to be a distraction from the main story. That is, did the experiment really take place? Having been myself a follower of Nikola Tesla, I have placed the following story up on my website. It comes from a 1989 story to a research and science magazine. The story in turn has been based on my articles and stories from actual survivors and persons involved in the project. Many of these people have died. It has reached a point where there are practically no eyewitnesses left to what has happened. Here is the story. You may have read the best-selling book The Philadelphia Experiment by Charles Berlitz and William Moore, or seen the movie of the same name. The Philadelphia Experiment came into being in 1931. You'll note, guys, that we were talking about 43 before, but now we're rewinding all the way back to 31.
Wow.
1931, when in Chicago, a small group of scientists got together to investigate the possibility of demagnetism of warships. The team included Josh Hutchinson, the dean of the University of Chicago, Dr. Emil Kurtenauer, an Austrian physicist, and Dr. Nikola Tesla. Tesla was director of engineering and research at RCA at the time. Mr. F.D. Roosevelt, then Secretary of the Navy, and yes, that is Franklin Delano, was a personal friend of Tesla. The U.S. was having problems with a magnetic mine that the Germans had developed and wanted to investigate the possibility of demagnetizing ships without the huge problems that it had of doing this at the time. This was before the time of radar, and the U.S. was trying to keep a step ahead of the Germans, who were very adept at new technology. The Germans were very advanced as far as technology, and the U.S. were very worried about falling behind.
Until we stole their scientists.
Yeah, but that didn't come until after World War II.
Yeah, it was great.
Project Byron, here's a pop quiz. Project
Fire Frog.
Paperclip, you son of a bitch.
Damn it.
At the time, the U.S. Navy was mainly concerned with the prospect of making its vessels anti-magnetic. Tesla started in 1936, and a partial invisibility occurred. The Navy saw immense possibilities, and in 1940, Project Rainbow was started. The U.S. Navy has recently tried to distance itself from the name. It has a website devoted to trying to convince everyone that Project Rainbow was some sort of covert intelligence project. Again, why are they spending so much energy on it? Doesn't make sense.
Odd.
It is weird,
yeah.
Right? Anyway, the project started in the Brooklyn Naval Yard, and in 1940, they achieved, for the first time, full invisibility with a minesweeper vessel. There was no crew on board. As I noted before, this is very important. Two radio transmitters and one main generator drove a series of four conical coils, generating an intense magnetic field. These oppositely wound coils produced a zero magnetic field, which is a scalar field, or what is referred to as a scalar value of zero, or the zero-point energy of the vacuum. In 1942, Tesla was given a battleship, but he became very concerned when he was told that the experiment would contain live crew. He complained about this. It's one thing to make invisible or time travel an object like a ship, but people have their individual time references. You can reference an object to travel, but with people, you have to individually reference their reference points to make sure it will all work. Tesla may have altered the settings on the equipment, but what happened when the experiment took place in 1942 was that nothing happened. Side note, people are theorizing when they charged Tesla with doing these experiments on a battleship that had live crew, he deliberately sabotaged.
It wasn't possible.
Oh, shoot. Look, like I said, the equipment won't work. Interestingly, only 10 months later, Tesla was found dead.
In a hotel room.
Yeah.
By himself. Lonely. Uh-huh.
broke.
Talking to pigeons.
Does that sound like something the government could do?
I like to think that they'd be above that kind of shenaniganery.
Did you listen to any of our MK Ultra episodes, Byron?
Why are you talking like I just said that?
Yeah,
because I need
Byron,
you to hit Sam.
Don't be a dick. Thank you for not hitting me. I appreciate that. We tried to eliminate violence from our podcast.
At this point, a gentleman named Von Neumann took over control of the project because he had no morals, and he was given a destroyer, the USS Eldridge. He was a professor at Princeton University at the time, and on July 20th, 1943, at 9 a.m., the next test was scheduled. Two young technicians, Edward and Duncan Cameron, manned the main switch room. I need you guys to remember those names. Those names are going to come into play even more as the story goes on. When these Cameron brothers tripped the switch in the main switch room, the ship went radar and optically invisible. 20 minutes later, when the ship reappeared, the crew were either hysterical or sick.
So there's a difference between invisible and completely disappearing.
So radar and optical invisible. So invisible to radar, like you could still be sitting right there and be invisible to radar if you had something around you, right? Optically invisible means the person standing right in front of you
and
can't see it.
Yeah. But so there's a big difference between seeing it and it not being there.
Right, like the James Bond car with the reflections on it.
Is that in Spectra?
I think it was in Goldfinger.
See, I don't know any of these films.
Well, that's just embarrassing for you. Okay, so the crew was either hysterical or sick. Von Neumann asked the Navy for more time to complete calculations, but word came down that the project must continue to the deadline of the 12th of August, 1943, as it was competing with the atom bomb project as the secret weapon to win the war. Von Neumann, though not as moral as Tesla, obviously, is still willing to conduct these experiments on live crew. He's saying, okay, well, that one didn't work. We need some more time to figure shit out. And they're like, you really don't have more time. You've got a month. Not even a month, like 3.5 weeks. August 12th, 1943, the original date we talked about, a fresh crew was enlisted to take place in another test. Philadelphia experiment begins. 9 a.m. Switches were flipped. Music. Main control room. And for 60 to 70 seconds, the Eldridge went radar invisible. Then there was a blue flash and the ship completely disappeared. For over 3 hours, the Cameron brothers,
Cameron Crowe and who else?
Edward and Duncan Cameron, were on the ship, but they were in the switch room, right? So they go up on deck, see the crew completely going batshit. They couldn't turn off the equipment, so they jumped overboard. When they saw everybody going batshit, they tried to turn the equipment off because they're like, well, this isn't working.
Are we talking like full Pontypool here? Like, what are they doing?
What do you mean?
Oh, good reference.
What are they going batshit? Like,
similar to what we've heard in the previous stories about people starting to walk through walls and they're losing their mind and they're getting really sick. They're puking and they're... So they try to switch it off. They can't switch it off. So they jump off the ship and land in 1983. Okay?
That is not the ocean they were in.
So they land in 1983... 40 years into the future, on a grass area at night. Laying in some grass on August 12th, 1983, and they're met by Von Neumann. Remember the guy in the 40s who was doing this whole experiment who took over when Tesla said, I won't do it?
That was the dick.
Right. So he meets them and he tells them, you guys got to go back to 1943.
And the safety dance is playing. And you as well, right?
You can dance if you want to.
Nope.
Yep.
It's already played.
Okay, rigor warning.
So he says they have to go back to 43.
I'll tumble for you.
They tumbled right out.
Yeah. Well.
For him.
That's not the safety dance.
No. I'm just reading off the top 30 for August 20th, 19.
When did Top Gun come out?
I don't know.
I was going to say because Danger Zone's a good song, but I think that was later.
Yeah. I feel like it was. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So. I hate that movie. Von Neumann says, you guys got to go back to 43 and you got to smash the shit out of this equipment because it's creating this huge bubble in hyperspace and it's growing out of control. And as the records said, they had to. Officially, Von Neumann died in 1957. So this is very, very confusing.
So it's double time travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another guy time traveled into the future to tell people not to time travel into the future.
Oh, the paradoxes are stacking up
here. I know, it hurts my head. Okay, so Von Neumann in 83 was working with time travel using technology that had been salvaged from the experiments 40 years earlier and also using alien technology that had been back engineered. So Von Neumann had the final results on the test and told the Cameron brothers what to do. Okay.
You got to call Doc Brown.
This is where it gets a little bit confusing. Remember, this whole story is Alfred Bielek's story. So Alfred Bielek is actually Edward Cameron.
Wait, one of the Cameron brothers.
Yes. I don't know why he switched his name, but I imagine so that he could operate undetected in 1983. He told them.
He said, in 1999, Skynet becomes self-aware.
So it's kind of like that. I know. So von Neumann sends them back to 1943 using the technology that he constructed in 1983, using the technology from 1943 that was rebuilt and also using alien technology. And so the guys go back. And on October 27th, 1943, a third successful attempt was made at invisibility.
Wait, how did they get back?
Using the technology that von Neumann reverse engineered from aliens, combined with what was recovered from the 1943 experiments.
So it's all a big lie.
No.
So this is a big lie?
No. I need you to stay with me.
All right.
October 27th, 1943.
Calvin Klein.
Yes, it is Calvin Klein. Oh my God. You know what my end all and be all? Never mind.
That was okay. Back to the Future reference for you kids at home.
Sorry.
It's okay.
All right. So this time, October 27th, 43, there is another experiment done without crew. Side note. When you read the surface stories about Philadelphia experiment, people always bitch about there being a contradiction between whether it happened in August or whether it happened in October. Well, here's your answer. It happened in both.
Oh, okay. It was a separate experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In this one, they did it without crew, and the Eldridge disappeared for 20 minutes, but it had apparently teleported. This is when it was seen for 10 minutes in Norfolk,
Virginia.
Yes. You got it. Nice work, fella. So when the Eldridge reappeared in Philadelphia Harbor, it was discovered that all of the equipment was destroyed. The control room was a smoking ruins. Only the zero time reference generator remained intact in its cabinet. What do you think did that? Could it be the Cameron brothers?
I hate the Cameron brothers.
I'm getting so rapidly sick of them.
Okay. The zero time reference generator was the most important piece of equipment. It was the one that was built by Nikola Tesla, and it locked the ship and its inanimate objects into the basic time reference of this space-time continuum, so they didn't get off kilter, all right? But like we talked about, humans aren't automatically locked in because they are not inanimate objects, and that's why you really can't do it with humans.
Okay, I'm sorry to interject here. I have been really waiting to do this because I've only fit one Terminator reference into this episode so far.
Okay.
That was why they had to send Kyle Reese back with no clothes on and no weapons, because humans have their own magnetic field and they can transmit it.
Sam, is this your way of saying that you actually believe me because it was referenced in the Terminator?
And why the T-800 could come back, because it was a metallic robot, but he was wrapped in human flesh. So, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
This is all making sense to me.
I'm so glad to hear that. No matter what fucking crazy way you get there, I'm really happy. So, without Tesla, von Neumann was unable to figure out this time reference thing in 1943 because Tesla was gone. The crew that was above deck at the time of the experiment were torn away from their point of reference. This is back in the August experiment, and traveled to another point in time. Some drifted off into hyperspace, were never seen again. Some came back and partially rematerialized in the ship's decks. Others burst into flames. This is actually one of the cases most discussed. I'm sure you guys have heard of human spontaneous combustion. We'll talk about that at some point too.
I would love to do stories of human combustion. I remember there was an episode of Unsolved Mysteries I watched as a child
that
ruined my life.
You know what's really weird to me? Of all the things that freak me out, I am literally not scared at all of spontaneous human combustion.
Like free cremation.
It's weird. I don't know why it doesn't bother me.
No charge.
Basically what happened is by the 80s, von Neumann figured out how to make this thing work and then sent the Cameron brothers back to the 40s.
Oh God, this is already hurting my head.
So the October test is successful because there were no humans on board. All of the equipment that could have worked for humans destroyed. Only the zero time reference generator remains. After the October 43 test, the project was supposedly set down. Von Neumann went to work on the atom bomb.
Bigger and better things.
You think we're done? We're not done.
Actually, that's all the time we have today.
We're not done. You guys remember that little thing that happened in July of 1947 down in New Mexico?
Are we talking the Roswell crash?
We are talking the Roswell crash. And immediately afterwards, von Neumann was given control over the back engineering of the technology that was recovered there, which is how he was able to figure out how to make this whole thing work back in 1943 in October. He figured it out, and then he went back.
So you're implying that aliens not only can travel light years in a second, they can also time travel.
Well, they can, but in this case, it wasn't them. It was just the Cameron brothers.
Okay, just the fucking Cameron brothers.
Yes.
I hate that we don't have a theremin.
One of whom is known as Alfred Beilig. Keep in mind.
Okay.
It was also discovered during the recovery of the Roswell wreckage that radar helped bring down the craft. We used radar to bring down more alien craft until the aliens figured out what the hell was going on.
We're using it as a weapon?
Yeah, to bring down alien craft.
We actually used the radiation emitted from radar system mm-hmm. to scramble their whatever navigational.
I don't understand why they haven't blown us up yet. Yes, correct. The Navy, though it stopped experimenting on ships, supposedly, they continued experimenting on the effects of powerful magnetic fields when it came to minds and bodies of people. That led to a new project, Project Phoenix, which started in 1947, oddly coinciding with the Roswell incident. Von Neumann headed this project. They did a lot of mind control, as you guys may not be surprised to hear. It eventually tied up into the MKUltra experiments.
Of course it did.
All roads lead to MKUltra.
Where can somebody learn more about MKUltra if they didn't want to do a bunch of research?
It turns out that there are three really freaking episodes that this amazing researcher named Captain K put together. I think they're on this show called Fright Day.
That's plenty enough.
In the 5 years between the Roswell incident and 1952, there were 16 discs that were crashed, 65 bodies that were recovered. A lot of dead were recovered from the crash, but there were a few survivors. One lived for 2 years, and this survivor apparently lived like a plant lives. He was living by osmosis, and botanists were employed to try to keep him alive. Von Neumann got information from them, these recovered bodies, specifically the one that lived for 2 years, on time reference and other technical information. In 1953, another invisibility test was conducted, this time with crew, and it was completed successfully due to this newly obtained information from the osmosis plant-like alien being.
I just picture the Little Shop of Horrors at this point.
Well, no, I think it's cuter than that little weird thing.
I was picturing the little chomper flowers from Mario.
I never liked those at all. Okay, so one of the spinoffs from this technology, guys. Sam, what would you imagine a piece of technology that sounds kind of linked to this that could have...
Stall technology.
Yes, Sam, you win! Husband,
I suspect that was fairly obvious.
Husband, I'm so proud of you. I don't know that I've ever been so proud of you before.
Oh, that's
I don't know what that says about a relationship.
That's not good.
So that's pretty cool. We're gonna do a little bit of discussion here about Alfred Beilig, just because I know it's a little bit confusing that Edward Cameron is Alfred Beilig. 1946, Edward Cameron, later known as Alfred Beilig.
Is it Finkel Einhorn as well?
I wish it was Finkel Einhorn.
Einhorn is Finkel.
I love Finkel Einhorn.
Right?
Edward.
That's an Ace Ventura reference.
Edward starts becoming outspoken about the Philadelphia experiment. For some reason, he could not be killed outright. Now, this is what's written on this site. I don't know whether they mean he can't be killed literally or whether it's for some reason the government didn't want to kill him. Whatever. Even though he traveled back in time, in 1947, he disappeared again, and apparently he was just sent to 1983 again.
I mean, that's prison of its own right there.
83 was when I was born. Maybe he's actually my father, guys.
I don't know.
I'm going to ask my father if his name is actually Alfred Beilig.
What I would be
picture
really...
Picture doesn't look similar, but it could be.
You never know.
I would be so interested to know, not that I could probably wrap my brain around it, but how these determinations were made of when and where people traveled.
What?
Or like, why 1983?
Oh, for some reason. So remember when they jumped off the ship, they just ended up in 83?
Yeah.
And it's just easier to go back there. They've got a meeting.
Well, so this is what happened.
Hole in space-time.
So when they shoot Edward from 47 to 83, now there are two Edwards there because there's the one Edward that traveled from 43 to 83.
But he had to go back at a certain point.
Right. But if you're back in 83 and you travel at the same time, this is what happens. Then there's a second Edward that came from 47. So we've got two fucking Edwards, which is a problem. The one from 47 was sent back to when he was 6 months old and given to the Beilig family in New York, who had just lost a six-month-old son very tragically.
Wait, this wasn't a child, though. Right?
No, he wasn't a child, but they sent him back to when he was 6 months old.
Oh, God damn it. We really need a whiteboard.
I know. I need to be like Doc Brown with the whiteboard diagramming things for you guys. Bylik lived an ordinary life growing up and in 1956 joined the Phoenix Project.
Oh, no.
When he met Jack Pruitt in Hawaii that year. So that was the story of Alfred Bylik. And then he continued on and he died in 2011. And later on, he became very outspoken because he knew exactly all these things that had happened to him. And he told everybody what was going on. Nobody believed him.
I wonder why.
We're going to talk about Duncan in a minute, too. His brother. We'll tell you what happened to him because he just stayed Duncan. Sheik. He actually became Duncan Sheik.
He became
Sheik.
Duncan
no,
Sheik?
I'm just kidding. He didn't.
He's barely breathing.
He didn't. He just stayed Duncan Cameron.
All right.
Okay. But this is an interesting side note, you guys, because you know how I love when things tie to UFOs?
Yes.
6 days before the August 12th, 1943 test date, three UFOs appeared above the Eldridge. Two disappeared on the day of the test, but the third disappeared with the Eldridge and wound up in
1983.
You caught it! Oh, no. And that's where I was actually born, on that UFO, in 1983. Bylik says that the whole Philadelphia experiment was set up by aliens to travel between 43 and 83, and that the experiments had to be coupled in time. It could not have occurred on any other date. The 12th of August is Earth's etheric body biorhythm peak, and it happens every 40 years. So the 12th of August on 43, it's kind of like Jeepers Creepers, okay? Every 23 years, but this is every 43 years. So the biorhythms of the Earth peak on August 12th, okay, every 40 years. So that's why it was happening, Sam, you asked why, between 43 and 83. You guys with me?
Well, yeah. Also on August 12th that year, there was a total eclipse at that point.
Of the heart?
Of the heart, you're right. By Bonnie Tyler.
I like the meatloaf version myself.
All right.
So Tesla claimed to have knowledge of aliens. He mentioned way back in 1899 that he had monitored alien communications. Sam, are you familiar with those stories that he told?
I may have blocked those
out. Okay, we'll talk about those much more in detail. He couldn't work it out at the time and was actually very alarmed because he couldn't understand what the aliens were saying. As the years went by, he became more and more talkative about aliens, in particular their technology, okay? F.D. Roosevelt, as we talked about, works into this. The president had met a group of aliens called the K Group. This Bylik called them the K Group, not the Greys. In 1934, they'd agreed to exchange technology for certain planetary privileges. Basically, the president really didn't have a choice and thought that it was the best of interest for everybody. So there was a first meeting with the Pleiadians and then a second with the K Group. The aliens told Edward Cameron that they wanted him to go forward to 43 and get back to them a charging device for a crystal, which was used as a...
Nope. I'm going to stop you now.
Oh, God. I don't think so. Crystals.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'm trying to keep it together. Which was used as a drive propulsion system for alien craft. They did not want the humans to have this technology yet. Okay. So they were like, get it out of 8043. Get it out of 83. Bring it back to us in 43. Okay. Now...
And this is... where we got the laser disc as well, right?
No. Edward Cameron went to 83, retrieved the crystal for the aliens, who were very grateful for his efforts. The aliens are pretty nice, though. Like I said, we've done some mean things. We shot down their ships with radar.
We tried to in 1942 in Los Angeles.
Well, yeah. That was funny, though. They were just like, you guys are dumb. Look at you guys. You guys are just stupid.
Yeah, and then we radared them.
2,000 rounds of 16-pound shells couldn't do it.
We tried.
But radar did.
Yeah.
Well, they were ready for the shells. They just weren't ready for the radar. Okay, so poor Duncan. When Duncan went to 83, his time locks were referenced to 43, and he aged a year for each hour and died in 3 days. So Duncan Cameron never came back.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
But von Neumann instructed Edward Cameron to return to 43 and tell his father, who was involved in the project, to get busy and have another son to take Duncan's place.
Why do they have to be Camerons?
Every time it's a fucking Cameron.
It doesn't need to be a Cameron. There's nothing special.
What I want to get
like
to the
Ramones?
Bottom of...
Are they actual brothers? Or?
Yeah, they are actual brothers. I want to know if Kurt Cameron is at all related
That's
to these
I'm
guys.
Thinking.
I really would like to know. I would also like to know whether the director, Mr. Cameron,
sure,
is related to them. I mean, he's really into aliens.
Oh my God.
Okay, so to convince his father to have another child, Edward Cameron, when he went back to 43, took back a copy of 1983 Life magazine. So the new son that they had was born in 51. In 1963, on the 12th of August, the soul of Duncan Cameron entered the body of the new son.
No.
I don't understand how that happens. There are no footnotes for how that occurred.
What about the other soul? Is there two souls in there, or did one get pushed out?
I think maybe it was just a shell. So what? The kid was 12 then. So maybe he was just a shell until he was 12.
Well, they usually are.
I guess that's true. Alfred Bielek passed away in October of 2011, 95 years old. This story is pretty hard to believe.
She's saying that now?
As Phil on this website is ready to admit, he said, I've looked into this since 1963, and believe me, I've had a lot of stuff about it. There is lots of disinformation about the story. People who I cannot find anything about and who have no contact details have posted websites solely to discredit this poor man, Alfred Bielek Edward Cameron. Others simply rubbish it. I really like rubbish used as a verb.
It's fun.
Okay? Phil says, in the interest of trying to keep the story as factual as I can, I have omitted the more unproven claims.
All right, Phil.
I tried to keep to the raw facts. Links to other places on my website, backup claims made here, and as I have always tried to do, I add links to backup my claims from other parts of my site. The truth is there, mixed up with all the disinformation and lies, and the rumor as well as those who seek the dollar. My site asks for no money, and the only reason I post up these stories is for general information and to try to put forward the view that we are not alone. So, what do you guys think?
Well, I
don't even know where to start with that. Like, where do you start taking that apart?
I mean, honestly, though, how good is that?
It's ridiculous. What is this guy?
I don't know.
It's insanity.
I don't know, but it is pretty amazing. I really like the idea that aliens were tied to this. I'm not really sure about the biorhythms of the Earth.
Sure.
Peaking every 40 years. I got to look into that a little bit more.
Or the Cameron bloodline.
I mean, we really got to look into the Cameron bloodline.
I don't
bloodline.
Know why that's important, but all right. Is this the first episode you can't handle what you're saying?
Well, did you hear some of the things I just said?
Yes, yeah, we heard it. That's not the point.
Oh, no.
You're a grown-ass woman repeating these facts for our listeners. That's the hilarious part.
I was very careful to say that I'm not claiming this is all fact. So, as I like to do with my Captain Kelly's episode, I'd like to wrap up with my beliefs about what actually happened and what didn't. Okay, the Philadelphia experiment is legit as shit.
Yeah, I know.
Phil and Alfred Bielek / Cameron's version of the story, I'm really not sure about. Sometimes the craziest things are the most true things.
It's true.
One of the things that does lead me to believe that something real happened, though probably not that version of it, is that there was a gentleman named Morris Jessup, who was an author of a book about UFOs. And for some reason, the U.S. Navy's office pulled him into the Office of Naval Research, known as the ONR, guys. Apparently, they had gotten a copy of Jessup's book filled with handwritten annotations that were all in the same handwriting in three different colors of ink, and that apparently revealed all the details of the Philadelphia experiment. Office of Naval Research wanted to know if Jessup knew anything about who the hell wrote those notes. And when Jessup came in, he recognized this handwriting as the handwriting of somebody who had sent him a series of letters. And this man called himself Carlos Allende. He claimed to have witnessed the experiment from on board a merchant marine ship, which you two are supposed to be fucking educated in, but apparently you two aren't.
We don't even acknowledge the maritime theme of this show.
Your resume said that you had both attended the Merchant Marine Academy.
I didn't turn that in.
I didn't
submit my resume.
Jessup just thought that this Allende was a total nut job and just kind of ignored the letters. But when he got called into the office, he's like, oh my God. Well, one of Allende's claims was that Albert Einstein had personally spent several weeks mentoring him on subjects such as invisibility and faster-than-light travel. Several copies of the annotated book were produced, and the rest is history. The Philadelphia experiment story became part of the fabric of pop culture. I mean, who the hell knows what the deal is with this Jessup? It turns out that Carlos Allende was actually a guy named Carl Allen, and he was trying to use a really clever fake name by adding O-S to his first name and D-E to his last name.
Add an E to the end, pronounce it Dirte. It's actually pretty cool.
Oh, Joe. Oh. I love David Spade. Okay.
You love David Spade?
I actually do. I actually do love David Spade. David Spade. I do.
It's people pity him.
No, I love him. I love him.
Oh, he was that guy in that Chris Farley movie.
So there's a lot of debate between skeptics and believers about this Carl Allen / Carlos Allende and whether he's completely full of shit or not, but it adds another dimension to the story that I think is pretty interesting. We don't have time to go into it today because unfortunately we read the entire Cameron story, so there's no time left. But I will leave links in the show notes to a couple of very cool, actually skeptic websites that talk about Carlos Allende, and then one website that talks about why they think that he was actually the real deal. I'm trying to get my hands on one of these annotated copies because apparently there are a few of them out there, and I'd love to read it just to see kind of the details that he claims to be true. But yeah, so that's the Philadelphia experiment, guys. It happened. Something crazy happened.
Bodies were embedded in walls.
I actually think that that probably did happen. Like the whole space-time fabric thing, that doesn't... Like I can buy into that. I don't think that guys jumped overboard into 83, but maybe they did.
That's a wild journey.
I mean, if they did, I really don't think that they then came back with copies of Time magazine to convince their dad to have another son.
Yeah.
And
how often does cowardice turn into adventure like that?
I mean, it is a pretty good adventure. Yeah. That's true. But that is one more question, right? Like if these two are a couple of cowards that like abandoned ship, why are we trying so damn hard to preserve their lineage? Like why is their lineage so goddamn important if they're just cowards?
I mean, maybe we'll do a part two about the Cameron?
I think what we need to do is we need to try and find one of Cameron's children and have them on the show. But here's what we're going to do, guys. We're going to go out today with some words from none other than Edward Cameron himself.
Wait, you got a Cameron interview?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I didn't, but there's one on YouTube. So he's dead. I couldn't interview him. I don't have the time traveling.
I just feel like we should be done with this after your episode is over.
Okay, here's him talking, guys.
Hello, my name is Alfred Bielek, more commonly known as Al Bielek. Original family name is Edward Cameron. We thank you for acquiring this CD. And the purpose of it is to present my history I've researched it over the years, as I have learned it, as comprehensive as it can possibly be.
I mean, the crazy thing is,
I have been involved in the Philadelphia Experiment, the Montauk Project, time travel, alien connections at the Montauk Project, and some other projects, all of which have been secret over the years, most of which have never been declassified. The purpose of this CD is to give you a base of information, as I have found it. Certainly not everything that may be known on these subjects, but all that I have acquired, which is over 11 years. When I first became aware of my involvement with the Philadelphia Experiment in January 1988, I had no idea how extensive my use, shall we say, by the government has been, nor where my research would go.
A CD, huh?
Yeah, I think that he's confused about modern technology a little bit because it's definitely got to be a DVD at least.
Because it's a video?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's some other fun stories out there that I encourage you guys to peruse on YouTube. For example, there is apparently a story where Al talks about time traveling to the year 2137 and then also to the year 2749. I haven't watched those. I'd love to hear what everybody has to say about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you should. So I think we need to start a Bielek Club.
Don't look at me like I'm going to be...
And you know
no,
how we
she's
do
looking
true
at you like you're gonna design t-shirts for it. For
you know club. How we do True Tales of Terror?
Yeah.
I think we need to do True Believers of Bielek.
No.
And we need to get together and have an episode every few months about that as well. Drop the anchor. We can pause for the time being. I appreciate you guys. Sam, I really do appreciate your Tesla references. I appreciate you understanding some of the things that I tried to get you to understand. I appreciated you guessing stealth technology at the right moment.
I Byron, make most of it up and
I
interpret the others wrong.
Trying.
What? Come on now. I did something this episode.
You did.
Byron kicked ass.
You did. And you're going to edit it to make me sound smart, which I really appreciate. Honestly, all of our co-captains out there, I know this is probably the furthest out there we've gone with Captain Kelly. I appreciate you guys holding on for the ride. I'm going to bring you back in a little closer to shore next time. We're going to do something a little bit within the realm of normal, comfortable beliefs. But I do encourage you to stretch the boundaries of your imagination with some more of these Bielek stories if you have a few moments this week. So thanks you guys so much. Hope that the seas are really smooth sailing for you until we meet again. And remember, next time we're going to be on the coast, so make sure you guys send us your warm wishes so that we don't capsize when we're actually seaborne, because it's been a while. So You guys can definitely check anything out you want to on our website, frightday.com.
Did someone I jump off yet?
No, you guys stay on board. Get me a fucking sandwich.
Oh, no.
I want a sandwich. I want a sandwich just made with meat from 1983 and bread from 1943.
It's a lot to ask.
So you guys, if you have any great stories or great ideas for Captain Kelly's episodes, please feel free to email me, kelly@frightday.com. I always tweet any interesting stories at me. I love it when our patrons and listeners tweet me news articles about things that are going on in the worlds of cryptids, conspiracies, paranormal, etc. And until next time, this is Captain Kelly signing off. Ahoy, mateys.
Ahoy's hello.
It's also goodbye. It's like, what do they say in fucking Hawaii? Oh.